Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TryTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the Raiders practice facility at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center, this is the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Guarab is on the line, wants to talk about the Raiders. How you doing, Guarab?
Hey, Vinny. Hi, Link. How you guys doing today?
Doing good.
Huh?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Okay, well, okay. Yeah, good. I'm doing good. Yeah, I was calling to find out. I'm a little concerned with the Raiders' defense, the running game with the defense, the run defense. And I just noticed that they get gashed quite a bit. Is there anything they can possibly do to fix that? It just seems like it hasn't really gotten much better. And another thing is, I was listening to JT the Brick earlier today, and he had one of the Philadelphia, I guess, rights for the Eagles. And he was talking about, like, you know, that the Eagles can't find an identity, and they're having their ups and downs, and they're, you know, I was kind of agreeing with JT that he was saying, I don't know how the Raiders are playing at home and they're only a three point favorite.
Okay. Well, as far as you cut out there, Guarab, not sure about the point spread. I don't really get into that too much, Lincoln. The Raiders are favorite. They haven't been favorites a whole lot this season. They certainly are on Sunday against the Eagles. And, you know, I think the number's pretty fair. What they're trying to do is entice people to bet one way or another. That's kind of how all that works. So I don't really get involved too much in that. As far as the running game, I felt, Lincoln, like the running game looked better, on Sunday. It wasn't great. I think it was 23 carries, 80-something yards, about 3.8 yards per carry, although Kenyon Drake had a good, healthy per-yard average per carry. But I felt like the run game was moving in the right direction. It's not there yet, but I think it's headed in the right direction, Lincoln.
I do too, and I think as we progress, the cohesiveness of the offensive line, the gelling of the offensive line is going to come together, as well as the run game. More importantly, I think that having an idea of what runs Jacobs does best is important. I've been of the mindset, and I've talked about it many times. I've said that downhill rather than stretch zone runs, I think, are best for Josh Jacobs. They can do certain things like wham, where they take a tight end to cut the line, the last man on the line of scrimmage one way or the other. And then the rest of the line pushes the opposite way. Those work well for Jacobs, but I'm of the mindset that you have, dives, gives, and off tackle runs that are better than stretch zone runs, for Jacobs, that he seems to be more, more inclined to perform better at.
Yeah, I agree. And, it was interesting to talking to Josh Jacobs today about the presence of Kenyon Drake and why he was so happy that Kenyon Drake did what he did. And he's like, you guys, I don't think people quite understand how close we are. Like, we go back a ways. I wanted him here. My body wanted him here because I know how tough it is to get through a season. And so it was refreshing to hear that from Josh, especially considering, he's in year three now, Lincoln, and money starts becoming a factor. Like, your next contract is on your mind. It would you'd be less than human if you didn't think about it. So selfishly, knowing that, players want as many touches as they can when you're in that position. When you make that second contract, you're in a much better position to say, hey, yeah, I love the help. When you're trying to get that money, it's usually, man, give me the ball. I need to show that what I can do, because every extra yard that I make theoretically is going to help make me another dollar. But it doesn't seem like that's all, well, I'm sure that's important to him, but he's not expressing it in the way that you would think. He wants the help from Kenyon Drake, and I think that's pretty refreshing, Lincoln.
Yeah, because look, let's face it. When they try to put the loads exclusively on Jacob's shoulder, he hasn't necessarily finished the season. And he started off the season being injured. So, you know, he already missed a couple of games. I do believe in today's game, it's got to be running back by committee. There's very few people who can handle the load exclusively. We're talking about, on average, throughout a year, what, 300-something carries a year, you know, a season? Very few guys who could do that and remain healthy. So you need them effective, especially in the latter part of the season when the weather starts to go down and you have to go out of places, that play outside. You need a running back who can still maintain that high level. And throughout Jacob's career so far, he hasn't been able to finish the season the way that he started.
Yeah, absolutely. And he told us today that, you know, he's felt really good these last couple of weeks, like better than he has ever at this stage of the game. So good. We've said this, you know, we've said this a lot, Lincoln, you know, getting him through the season to the point where he's in good shape come December and, you know, into January. That's the goal. So if you're giving up a little bit now in order to be at that point later, all the better for Josh Jacobs, and I think he understands that. Damon, who's the next caller?
Silver Fury.
That's right. Silver Fury, you're up next. Welcome to In the Huddle. What you got, brother?
Hey, what's going on, you guys? How you doing?
We're doing good, thanks.
Hey, Link, can I add a little funny part of to your story you're talking about with Joe Bugle?
Uh-huh.
All right, so I was in section 147 at season tickets, you know, the duration of their stay. You guys were 0-4, and Denver was in town. It was kind of a big deal because we're trying to get off the Schneid, and I think we needed one first down to run out the clock, right? And Timmy Brown got the catch, got the first down, and that was when Joe Bugle was running across the field to shake Shannon's hand, and he gave the Denver salute as he's running across the field, and that's the memory I get from 1997.
Just good for that's awesome, man.
Yeah, so that was kind of a, I don't know, big deal about it. But anyways, I just wanted to comment on the game from last week. Just my perspective. I'm looking forward to Philadelphia, but just what you guys think. And it's only one game. It's only a one-game sample, but, you know, Gruden calling plays and Olsen calling plays, and I think Gruden's a, you know, absolutely dominating play designer. I love his play design. But for Baltimore, for example, you know, it seemed like Gruden, when he was calling plays, was kind of trying to force his will onto the team, you know, and not so much trying to get what he could, and it kind of, I don't know, it's just my opinion, it kind of created a lot of inconsistency. And with Olsen in Denver, it seemed like he was taking what Denver was given. He was chewing him up in the middle of the field. You know, then he was hitting him on the sideline. You know, he'd take his deep shots, and he was just kind of going where Denver necessarily wasn't. And I was just wondering what you guys thought about that, about just, you know, their philosophies and maybe you know, the reason why you know, that we had a lot of inconsistencies in our offense with when Gruden's calling plays and with Olsen, and even though it's a one game sample, but I was wondering what you guys thought about that.
I liked what I saw from the play calling, Lincoln. I felt like it was more expanded. I thought that obviously the screen pass was something good to see. If you're a Raider fan, the wheel route for the touchdown to Kenyon Drake was something that, you know, the Raiders needed to get him implemented, and they definitely got him activated on Sunday. So it felt like they were moving the ball around. They were giving everybody their chances and their touches, Lincoln. I felt like it went pretty well.
I do too. And it was much that I expected that, you know, Carr was going to have a little bit more leeway with, especially with the check with me system. We've seen this sort of progression growing through the last couple of years that Carr's been with Gruden. And he said it himself in various press conferences that he knows what Gruden's thinking and he knows where he wants to go. So he has, you know, Derek having some idea of what he wants to do, understanding defenses. There's a lot to be ascertained between pre-snap reads for Derek. And I think he's used that. There are times where I get a little impatient. I got to admit it. I get a little impatient. I'm up in the booth. I'm just like, just run the play, because he gets down on the play clock. But for the most part, I've been impressed with what he's did. And more importantly, the rhythm that we saw in the Bronco game offensively during series, I thought was strong. I thought it was a good variation of run pass, taking what the defense gives you, but more importantly, understanding the weaknesses or the advantages that the offensive players would have over the defensive players, much like the King and Drake being isolated on the Denver's middle linebacker. You knew you had an advantage there, and he took advantage of it, especially in the last play. They showed it early in that series. We talked about it yesterday with the out route, and then after the timeout, calling the out and up in a beautifully delivered pass, you know, turned into a touchdown.
Absolutely. And I think that was something that you're going to see more of. And we talked about this yesterday, Lincoln. You know, it's just, he's a different person, Greg Olsen, than John Gruden. They see things a little bit differently. So it's not going to be the same. But for one game anyway, I liked what I saw. I felt like it just was, and, you know, Derek Carr talked about this too. He was getting the plays earlier, Lincoln, and we've seen this before where the clock's going down, and Derek's still trying to communicate at the line of scrimmage, and a timeout has to happen, or sometimes they get a delay, a game penalty. Derek was talking about literally how, you know, Greg got me the play much earlier in the process, and it just created a more smoother operation. That's kind of frustrating when you see the quarterback still kind of scrambling around as you're looking at the clock and it's getting down to, you know, 5, 4, 3, and they're not even close to being ready. Do you think just having one less filter involved in terms of it would go Greg to John, you know, giving his recommendations, and then John to Derek? Now it's just Greg to Derek.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. You know, I kind of put it like this because he did, you know, Gruden did the same thing when Callahan was assistant coaching. Callahan was the run advisor, much like Tom Cable is the run advisor or was with Gruden. You know, Gruden was like, hey, look, I need a run. Give me a run. What kind of run should we use in the situation? And Callahan would suggest what run, and just like Cable suggests which run. Gruden does the same thing with Olsen, and a lot of say, hey, I need, you know, we got to have a short pass. I want to get Waller involved. What should we call it? So give it that type of insight. And there's something to be said about that sort of channeling of logic, if that makes sense. But in the same course, what I think we're seeing now, and what I think we'll see throughout the rest of the season, as Derek has that green light, you know, much like the basketball player, because I love the fact that basketball season started, you know, much like you say a basketball player has a green light to shoot it from anywhere, Derek has that green light to call what he thinks is best. And with the check with me system, you see Derek doing a lot of that, whether he's like, we're good, let's stay here. No, check, we're going to run this play. He has that green light, and he's had that green light for some time. And there have been, and you know, to somewhat of a detriment, if you look at it, Vinny, because there have been times where, you know, you've seen Derek come off of the field after a series, and he's having long, expanded conversations with Gruden about, you know, why'd you call this, or why'd you do that, or why that. They're trying to get on the same page. I think Greg Olsen and Derek are a lot closer on that page than say at times Gruden and Derek were, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Back out to the Raider Nation listener line. Just Win Wendy is on the line. How you doing, Just Win Wendy?
Hey, I'm great. It's raining in Northern California, and we're all really happy up here. The dust is settling, and we actually have moisture on the ground. It's awesome.
Nice, nice. Absolutely.
So I just wanted to say, both of you, but definitely Lincoln, I was listening to the Silver and Black show last week, and some of your ideas for the keys to the game and things like that before the Bronco game. And then the game happened, and I also listened to you and Brett during the game. And I know the most surprised I heard you was obviously the screen. That was awesome. But I was wondering if, you know, reflecting, or even if you've thought about it in the last couple of days, what was the thing that surprised you the most about the coaching on Sunday? I mean, some people have asked you, you know, well, what about this and this and this? But I want to hear from you. What did you find surprising or, you know, pleasingly surprising in how the game went?
Well, it's a great question, Wendy, and thank you very much for being a loyal listener and supporter. I will say, in all honesty, what I was most surprised about was the relaxation level to a coach on the sideline throughout the entire team. Because I felt going into everything that happened, being in Denver and all this stuff, even though the Raiders have had recent success against the Broncos, it wasn't far-fetched to think that they were going to continue that success. The relaxation amongst the coaches that I saw at the hotel and the way they carried themselves on the sideline. The only time I saw any of the coaches upset is when Gus Bradley had a problem with his headset getting the play calls to the Mike linebacker. That's the only time I saw any disruption or any sort of conflict or unsettling amongst the coaches throughout that game. Now, of course, the game was well in control, but you know, you the first series, you know, when they got the ball, I was hopeful that they would get off to a fast start. They were trying to get points out of the drive, and they did. First series, got points. I was thankful for that. And then, of course, the Broncos countered with getting points of their own right afterwards. And I was studying the sideline at that point, Vinny. I was looking at the sideline. I was waiting for there to be some sort of tension and looking at the coaches from across the field from the booth, and I was waiting to see something, and they weren't. Everybody was relaxed. Everybody was, and that, I think that played into to the way the players felt, because all they could do is, all the players could do is just go out and play. So I was completely, you know, set aside, upset the fact that the coaches were doing their job at the level and did not allow the external distractions to get the best of them. So that's what I was most ecstatically pleased about.
We're going to go out to Luke in Pasadena. How you doing, Luke?
Guess he's not there.
He don't want to talk to us anymore. Oh, he don't want to talk to us.
I got it. That's okay. Great explanation, by the way, Lincoln, on that. Really appreciate that. But yeah, I think here's the other thing about what happened on Sunday, Lincoln. I feel like the Raiders not only opened some eyes in a lot of different places, because I really truly felt that a lot of people thought they were just going to fall flat on their face. I felt like, oh, here come the Raiders. They're going to do what the Raiders do or have done the last couple of years. They're not going to respond. This is going to be the reason for their, you know, face plant. It's just going to be all, you know, more of the same. Well, I think the Raiders decidedly shut those people up. And I think that happened, but I also think they answered some questions within Lincoln. I think everybody is always in a quest, whether it's yourself, what you do in your vocation, of trying to be the best version of yourself. But we all have questions and we all have doubts, and sometimes we need to see it, you know, for ourselves to believe more in ourselves. Do you think that the win on Sunday, in light of everything that was going on, opened up eyes for the Raiders as well? And have you ever been in a position where you don't know who you are as a team, and you know it takes a little while to get that figured out, and then you feel like, hey, we're a pretty good team here.
I think that's the answer to your question right there. I do. I think that they're slowly figuring out. I think coming into this season, what we've seen bits and pieces of it, that they're figuring out how they are as a team. I know that Derek knows that he's got a bunch of weapons. We've seen him use those, especially after the first game when he was committed to getting the ball to Darren Waller. You know what I mean? He threw it, I think it was 19 times and completed 10 of them. He was committed to getting the ball. But since then, using, you know, trusting Bryan Edwards, especially on that press man route that Edwards, he threw the ball to, and Edwards went up and took it away, you know, long game in the Denver game. He's slowly beginning to understand, or he understands at this point, what he has weapon-wise.
Right.
It's just a matter of the small intangibles putting them together, if that makes sense, Vinny.
Yeah, it does. And, you know,
the offensive line coming together, you know what I mean, and playing better, you know, the defense doing what they do on a consistent basis and giving them the opportunities. There are times where as you said, and you pointed out, there's times where you hit your head on the wall and you get a little frustrated because you think so much high of the team. But I don't think anybody ever came through this season and said they were going to be undefeated. you know what I mean? So
no, you
didn't know where they were going to lose and who they were going to lose to. But I think the so far, what we've seen, what are we, six or seven games? Can't remember, six games?
Six games.
Where they are right now, and as they push forward, especially over the next, 3 weeks, you know, give them the win for the bye. No one loses in the bye week, so.
Right, exactly.
But you got two very beatable teams that are down and still trying to find themselves, and you want to keep them down, the Philadelphia Eagles and the New York Giants in the most recent week, so.
You know, you mentioned Derek Carr developing more chemistry and more trust in Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards. You know, but trust is a two-way street. And, True. You know, as Derek kind of explained to us, you know, it really does start in practice. And, you know, hey, if I throw it to you three times and you don't come up with it three times, I got to move on at some point. Because, you know, and he wasn't like, you know, thinking real highly of himself here when he said this, or overly high of himself. He's like, every decision I make as a quarterback kind of affects this team, you know, like if I'm forcing it somewhere where the rate of success is not where it needs to be, that's, I'm not doing the job that I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I got to go find somebody else that is going to catch the ball. And you don't have time at this level necessarily to, if you don't feel like it's going to happen, then, and I think that happened a lot in Derek Carr's career early on, or these last, I should say, not so much early on, but that little segment between 2017, 18, kind of 19. And I always felt like, especially after I got here and kind of, you know, started asking people and talking to people and getting a better understanding of things. Mm-hmm. I don't think he felt like there was a whole lot of confidence to be had in some of the players that he was working with at that time. And that's nothing against them, whatever. But you can see that's, you know, hey, what is he supposed to do? Just keep forcing it someplace where the chances of success aren't all that great. Whereas this year, and this is a credit to Henry Ruggs, and it's a credit to Bryan Edwards, we kind of got an inkling talking to some people like, hey, these guys are on the right track. They're doing things with their bodies. They're eating right. They're putting in the work. Henry's getting stronger. He's working on his craft. Bryan is headed in the right direction, especially if he stays healthy, because that was his biggest issue last year. But to those guys' credit, Lincoln, it's them who's creating the trust in Derek, rather than Derek, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's good on them more than Derek, because they've shown him, hey, I could make plays over here. And now he's going to them more and more as a result.
Well, I mean, I've seen throughout Derek's career how he tries to establish a chemistry with certain receivers. Mm-hmm. I saw with Amari Cooper, I saw with Michael Crabtree, and almost to, you know, a degree. I mean, he began, you know, when Crabtree was with the team, Derek banked on the fact that he could throw the back shoulder throw, and Crabtree would get it. He would win the ball. He doesn't necessarily have the rapport with that throw with any of his receivers just yet, but you can see where he's trying to, you know, sort of not necessarily force the issue, but make it happen. He's going to put the ball in places where he only thinks the receiver is going to be able to adjust. And there's been, you know, certain communication breakdowns that have happened, which is going to happen. It's definitely going to come along, but what I respected is that he's willing to take the chance. Derek's an incredibly accurate quarterback. I'll always give him credit for that. There are, you know, minuses that he has in my mind, but that doesn't have to be talked about right now. But at the same point, I've always said he's incredibly accurate and he can make every throw on the football field. We saw that in Denver. I think where he put the ball for Bryan Edwards when he had that press coverage where Edwards had to defeat the man who was all over him in order to make the catch is one of them. The one to Kenyon Drake over the linebacker's shoulder that dropped right in, you know, right in Drake's hands so he could run in for the touchdown was another one. I mean, there have been beautiful passes that have happened. The one to Henry Ruggs between the safety and the corner, I mean, had to be an incredibly accurate throw. So I will give him credit for that accuracy. And I think he's developed that chemistry with certain receivers. And it's really fun to watch when you think about it, Vinny, because you know what a guy like Hunter Renfrow can do. You know what a guy with Darren Waller can do. But you know, where the defenses are offset now, even more so, because of sort of the emergence of a Ruggs and an Edwards and Drake and people out of the backfield, whoever it be. It really you can't key on one or the other, because right. I've seen safeties throughout the game jump on Darren Waller. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a corner to the safety because they think he's going to go with the ball. I mean, and in even the classic case where Pittsburgh was one of the most notable ones where the safety jumped on Darren Waller thinking he was going to go to Waller and he threw it over the top to Ruggs for the touchdown. Yeah. That's what the safety was out of position because he guessed wrong. Mm-hmm. That's a fun thing to watch from our vantage point.
Yeah. And, you know, Derek's not a perfect quarterback, and I think he understands that. And, you know, just as maybe he didn't take chances down the field because he wasn't comfortable with who he was throwing it to, you know, people who want him to do certain things, like maybe run with it, I don't think he has confidence necessarily in that part of his game.
He's not. That's not him.
And probably rightfully so, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he just believes that's the worst thing for this team right now is me trying to run the darn ball because I'm not that good at it, you know, and maybe that's just kind of a self acknowledgement. And, you know, does he need to be protected? Does it need, you know, for the most part? Yes, definitely. But if you protect this guy, his accuracy that you just talked about comes through. And for anyone that says, well, if you can say that about any quarterback, sorry, you can't. That's not the case. Like, even if a well-protected, so, you know, quarterback X can't do the things that this guy can when he is protected. So, you know, I think a better understanding for fans sometimes of what your guy is capable of doing and can do as opposed to what you want him to do or see him do, you know, sometimes it's easier to come to that, your own conclusion, like, okay, he's not running or whatever, because he's not that good at it. And he probably understands that and, you know, tries to work around that deficiency in his game. But otherwise, I think he's a good quarterback, a pretty darn good quarterback. And I do think that he needs great protection. And if you give him that, he could light it up. And not a lot of guys can do that on the face of this earth. You know, there's probably about 20 or so guys at any given time that can at a really high level. Now, there's other guys like Justin Herbert that you put him on the move, you rush him, he's going to make you pay a bunch of different ways. But the Raiders quarterback isn't that kind of an athlete. So, you know, you have to come to grips with that. Not you. I'm not talking about you, but just people because you hear it out there. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't want to get on his bad side. I want to be stay on his good side.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want him to not friend me on Twitter. So
you're in the huddle. It'll be his brothers. You're in the huddle with Musker and Lincoln Kennedy. You're brought to you by Tequila and Bajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Benny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187 or tweet them at Benny Bonsignor and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Benny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Luke in Pasadena is back with us. How you doing, Luke?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing good, thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to say, a big fan of the show, long-time listener, first-time caller, and you personally got me off the national radio circuit, so I just wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, I didn't mean to do that necessarily. Just listen with a grain of salt. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to thank you for, is because after listening to your show for the summer and the summer prior, I kind of realized that they have a bird's-eye view of what the team is really actually doing, what any team is actually really doing, so... It was a eye-opening experience, to say the least.
Much appreciated.
But I did want to bring up a question regarding Josh Jacobs' comments in media today. I found them to be quite interesting. And I know that you guys have probably read it on the show already. I haven't been able to listen to the entire show, but I wanted to hear your thoughts and how we kind of manage that moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you're referring to that there was a lot less cussing and anger and things like that and emotion on the sidelines, was that what you're talking about? It sounds like that was the question that Luke was asking because Josh did talk about how and he said it with a smile, but there was just a little bit less. You know, I guess emotion and sometimes anger and sometimes, you know, carrying on when you did something wrong when John Gruden was there. I mean, that's flat out what he was saying. So let's not even try to pretend like that's not what he was saying or, you know, circle around it. And I think Lincoln, you know, sometimes as your coach goes, the team goes, and you're going to feel that emotion, and it's going to affect you in some certain way as well. And it's easy to say, oh, just block it out, it's just the coach being the coach, but that is the leader. And sometimes, you know, how the leader is and his demeanor is, players sometimes respond to that or feed off of it for the good or the bad. Lincoln,
well, I think, you know, we've talked about it, but what I want to point out to the listeners, as well as I think the sanity of the team and many players, is what's their future? Because it's not just a head coach. It's someone who put together this roster. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? So there are a lot of guys on one-year contracts that are probably questioning what's their future like with the team, especially if they like being with the Raiders. There are guys who were drafted by Gruden, like Jacobs, that, you know, they were saying, well, you know, what type of security blanket do I have here? Especially if a new coach comes in, cause that's not mixed words. If a new coach takes over, he's going to want his own guys. He might not like Derek Carr. He might not have a system in place for Josh Jacobs. He might not want, you know, some of the notable names that are on this roster. There might be another change where, you know, somebody comes in and turns over the roster again.
Yes.
And that's a serious concern. So, you know, usually a team is going to take on the identity of its head coach. Usually. When you have this much of a disruption or this magnitude of disruption at this part of the season, it's anyone's guess what identity this team is going to have. But that's how you can best circle the wagons or close the formation down if you want by just going out there and winning, beating and playing good football. That's where we're at right now.
No doubt about it. And I think what Josh was trying to point out was the sidelines was way less hectic. And I think that in the course of a game, players can feed off how their coach is reacting.
Certainly.
And you know, and if it's crazy and it's a lot of cussing, and you know, when you get to the sidelines and you just messed up and you're getting an earful about it, you know, and everybody's screaming at the referees and stuff, you know, players feed off of that. They feed off of emotion. And it was a whole lot less of that. And I'll bring up a good point. I mean, a point that kind of ties into this. When we were in Thousand Oaks, when the Raiders went up to practice against the Rams, okay, that second day, I think it was, it might have been the second day, it could have been anyway, guys were getting after it, okay, on both sides, all right? It was a very, very, very competitive situation, all right? And you could just feel it. We were on the sidelines. We had tremendous, like I could have reached out and touched John Gruden. Like that's how close we were, the way the practice field is structured in Thousand Oaks and the access that you have as reporters. And it got really emotional on those sidelines. There was a lot of, you know what, talking, a lot of craziness. Okay. And I remember we all talked to Max Crosby afterwards. And he was like, I was just sitting there, man, going like, everybody just chill. Everyone was screaming. Everybody was yelling, cussing, screaming. I'm like, dudes, chill out, man. Like, chill out. That was what I thought about today when Josh Jacobs was talking to us about how it was less of the way it was in Thousand Oaks Sunday and much more kind of a calm, cool, collected type of a environment over on the sidelines. Again, he was laughing when he said it, but there was some truth to what he was saying. Like, I think Lincoln, there was a little bit of a little more relaxed, and players sometimes respond to that better than they respond to guys screaming and yelling and screaming at the referees and everybody's mistakes being pointed out right there in the sidelines. Sometimes people react badly to that, is what I'm saying.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
You know, I remember having a conversation with Tony Dungy, Hall of Fame coach, and he told me that he never raised his voice. He never used explicitives and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, good for you. You know, I never took it personal when a coach did use explicitives. I mean, there were certain times where we played like crap that I expected the Boo Birds to come out. And so I knew walking over the sideline, you know, looking at the coach like, oh, yeah, you played like, yeah, you're right. And definitely deserving so. So, but at the same point, you know, different strokes for different folks. There's many ways of getting to people. You don't always have to be that, you know, that hardcore hand me down. But again, you know, and what I knew of Gruden, that was just his way. He was going to argue. You know, you were going to see him on the sidelines. Are you bleeping kidding me? Are you calling that? I mean, you saw the mannerisms captured on camera many times. You saw you. I mean, you've been around him. You saw it. It was who he was. And there are times where your team is going to take on that sort of identity as well.
And it's not always for the good. And I'm not bashing John Gruden here, but you know, and that's why I think I was alluding to this earlier. You know, this is also a different generation. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
things are just done a little bit differently now than when you were coming up and I was coming up. I was a little bit ahead of you. The things that I could think about, things that my coach did to me when I was in high school and others around me, the names that we got called, every name in the book, number one, every nationality was pointed out in not a very good way. And you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, imagine. Can you imagine? Like,
no. We were,
right. Exactly.
You know, even when you see coaches like these days where they have on social media where a coach grabs his kid's helmet, you know, you have parents who are blown. Oh, my gosh, he can't put his hands on it. It's a different time. I mean, look, my high school coach used to chew athletic tape, and when he got mad at you, he would throw it at you. And I thought that was the most disgusting thing in the world. Man,
I know, but it
was just his way of getting your being frustrated, getting your attention. And so, you know, I didn't report him. I mean, but yeah, it's a different time, different generation.
I was like more of your scout team type of football player. You know what I'm saying? So, so I was the guy where the coach when he was like illustrating, you know, what the other defense was doing, let's say. I was the guy that was moved around, whether it was a 52 front or a 40, whatever it was.
My
face mask would get grabbed and it would be, he's over here in this look, you know, and then they would grab it. Now he dragged me over here. This is where it would be like on the third day. You know, I'm like, that's, you imagine.
Oh, man. And Vinny, I'm often asked why I didn't get into coaching. I said, because I don't have the patience. I mean, if I'm sitting in a room, and I'm trying to coach, say, the O-line. Let's just say I'm coaching the O-line. And one of my offensive linemen tell me, oh, I got it, coach. I got it, coach. You don't need to talk about it. I'm going to throw a stapler at the back of his head. I'm going to be out of a job. You don't know nothing. You don't come from nothing. You ain't been nothing. You don't know nothing. But, yeah, I know it all too well, my friend.
Exactly. It's like – my bad, coach. You say my bad one more time. Like, it's been your bad for like 3 weeks now. Everything is my bad. Yeah, let's try to make it my good. How about that? Jeez. It's a different generation, Lincoln. There's no doubt about it. We're going to go back out to the Raider Nation later. Listener line, Raider Mike is on the line. How you doing, Raider Mike?
What's up, Paizan?
How are you doing,
What's up, man? Link? Loved your play at Washington. Loved your play as a Raider. You were a beast. Anyway. This has been the code red ordered on Chucky was a blessing in disguise. I mean, look at the sideline during that Denver game. We were relaxed, weren't happy, and Derek, our general, was just on fire. He's like, John, you had a Lamborghini here parked in neutral. Give me the keys. And John never handed over the keys. So he got the keys, and look what happened. He torched them.
that was a very good defense. So the blessing of disguise has happened. We need to move on, Raider Nation. We got punched in the gut like no other since the F rule, Tuck rule, whatever you want to call that crap. So the future's bright. We got to wear shades. I'm pumped. And Bisacci, Goldberg Jr., is the perfect CEO, a PR guy, has his hands in every player's dish. But he says, Ole, you do this, you do your thing, and he torched it. Gus, you do your thing, he torched it, and I'll do my thing. I don't want Bisacci going nowhere. I don't want to tear down this team. Gruden did build this team. I am going to give it to him. But his ways, you guys just talked about it. The every inkling of crap that happened on the field, he's yelling at people, screaming at people. Everyone's tense. You can't play tense. We were all athletes. When you play relaxed, you destroy people. When you're all tensed, you make mistakes. That's just the way it is. And it's a new generation. These kids are coming up. They don't respond to that. We have Alabama West here. One third of our roster was coached by Saban, one of the most relaxed coaches in college football. It's just the way he is.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Raider Mike. We got to hit a break here. I really appreciate the call, Raider Mike. Although,
Vinny, did he say Goldberg Jr.?
Yes.
In reference to Bisacci?
Yes.
Did I hear that right?
You did hear it right. You did hear it right.
Classic.
And by the way, Nick Saban being all cool, calm, and collected on the sideline.
Well, I've seen him fired up too. So
I have too, but it's a lot easier. Like I said, yeah, it's easier for John Wooden to say, I'm going to go take a seat when it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton and Marcus John, you know, all of those type of guys.
Yeah,
I mean, he had
certainly
the best players in the country by bar none. So it makes the job a little bit easier. So, but anyway, I agree. I think that teams sometimes feed off the energy, good or bad, or fanatic or chill. And I think they played like that. They followed the lead,
wow,
yeah, of the energy that the coach was sending off on Sunday in Denver. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Wednesday.
No one gets you closer to the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy.
So Lincoln, I didn't get the reference. What was Raider Mike talking about right there? Do you know?
So Goldberg, do you know about Bill Goldberg?
Vinny, come on.
I don't.
You got to know Vinny. No? Okay. Well, no. DeMond's going to know him most notably.
Maybe I do, but I'm just not capturing it.
Okay. So DeMond's going to know him most notably from wrestling, because he made a name for himself on
that's
the
who WWE. I thought it was a wrestler, because my yeah, son was a huge wrestling fan. But yeah. But what? How does it relate to?
Well, because they kind of look similar. They kind of look alike. I can see where
do
he's going from.
Yes, they
yeah,
do.
So, but what's do interesting? What stuck out to me was that I actually played with Goldberg in Atlanta. He was drafted out of I think he was drafted out of Georgia, and he was with the Falcons. And I remember, and the reason why I chuckled at it, because I remember the stories that we used to locker right next to one another. And Goldberg told me that he was going to go into wrestling. That he was a fan of wrestling, and he always wanted to be a part of wrestling. And lo and behold, after his career didn't really happen in the NFL, he makes his way to the WWF. And I remember seeing him, and I was just like, "You got to be kidding me! Goldberg is wrestling," and he became a giant. I mean, he was big. DeMond can attribute to this. He was huge in wrestling
time. He had the streak. He was undefeated. Like, man, he's still in Lincoln. Well, he's still going today. He's still going.
Is
today.
He?
Yes.
Yeah, wow. Now I totally understand what he was referencing, and it makes all sense, because he does look like Bisaccia. And also,
Goldberg Jr., I was just like, yeah. I never thought about it until he said it. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I can see it.
and DeMond, you're young enough. Let this be a lesson to you. always have a backup plan, you know, because obviously that was his backup plan, and his backup plan turned out to be much better than what the original plan was in the NFL, because that dude made a lot of money for himself, and he like Damon said, he's still going strong, so it's good to have a backup plan. But it was interesting day to day, and you know, we all, when Josh said what he said, and again, I have to preface this by saying, he said it with a smile, and he knew what he was talking about. But there's just certain coaches that are just a little bit more high strung than others. And, you know, for good or bad, players sometimes feed off that. And the question that I had for you, Lincoln, is do you think it affected the Raiders adversely? Maybe. Especially coming down the stretch when things got a little bit tighter, and we've seen what's happened the last couple of years with how they fall off in the second half. Do you think it had any effect the way John Gruden was, especially his game day John Gruden?
Yeah, I do. I think that the way Gruden was coaching, the way his personality was, I think that sort of came to the way the personality of the team was. But what we were trying to, I guess the lesson that was going to be learned was for the second half of the season. Because the last couple of years, we saw the second half of the season sort of fall apart and fizzle for the team, if that makes sense. You know, the offense and the personality. And so we were waiting to see what was going to happen. Now that you have this new direction or this change, it'll be interesting to see how the second part of the season, comes out, especially after the bye.
Now, here's something that this in a way, this kind of sets up badly for a John Gruden, because I think above and beyond, whatever anxiety he may have created on the sidelines on game day, that aside, the reality of the situation is that Raiders defense just was terrible the last couple of years, especially last year. And, you know, I did a story about what the Raiders kind of need to do in order to avoid those pitfalls. And I think emotionally, leadership, all of that counts. But when you start looking at this defense, Lincoln, it's a really good defense. I don't see them, short of, injuries can play a role in it. But if they stay healthy, you're not going to see those monumentally damaging collapses that they had late in games last year, like the Miami Dolphins game or the Chargers game, where they scored in overtime and they gave up a touchdown right back to them to lose the game against the Chargers, or that Kansas City Chiefs game where they left a minute 43 left on the clock, and after taking the lead and the Chiefs marched down the field and scored the game winning touchdown. I think just that alone, the better defense, and it's clearly better, is going to help save them from those second half collapses. And I wonder if they are able to sustain this, Lincoln, if people are going to look at John and say, oh, he was the reason why they needed a coaching change, because, they would have fallen flat on their face just like they did the last couple of years. But I think it will be more of a talent thing than.
Well, I agree with you. I think we'll get into it obviously tomorrow, because we're short on time. But I think that the defense has been a lot better for this team. And I think in the long run, the defense is going to be something that is sustainable, and that will be the difference maker.
We shall see it, but I'm leaning in your direction without a doubt. We will be back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 a.m. on a Wednesday. And shout out to Damon Cotton, who holds things down back at home base like no other. Damon, you know how we feel about you. Thank you very much. We'll see everybody, talk to everybody, listen to everybody, take your calls, everything tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. in the huddle. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.